Welcome to AchieveCast, the podcast that tells the stories of the great works happening in Achieve communities across this country. I'm Dr. Tate Martin, and for the next couple of minutes, we'll be hearing how one community came together to make great things happen through Achieve. On this podcast, I had the opportunity to speak to Aaron Engelbrecht of Albuquerque, New Mexico, a 2008 Achieve community, on how her community came together to develop an urban trail for all users.
Aaron Engelbrecht, coordinator, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
On our call, the first question that I asked Aaron was, why was an urban trail selected as the focus of their Achieve initiative?
Well, the Albuquerque Achieve community had received funding from the NACDD, National Association of Chronic Disease Directors, to implement one of their three guides. So the community chose the trail guide, promoting physical activity through the use of a community trail. And from there, the coordinator and the people who were on the chart went through kind of identifying some of the needs for implementing the process of the trail, where it would go, how to go about that. And it came to working in an area of Albuquerque that they had identified as a high-need urban area called the International District. The group decided that in order to implement the trail that they would use, they would consult with a professional planner. And the planner, who had worked with the Alliance for Active Living and some other pedestrian safety and pedestrian advocacy work, was hired and consulted for this project. So that was another additional benefit towards the process. It's kind of a crucial piece, actually, was to find a planner, because most of the people in the group were in public health. And from there, they went through a series of planning workshops and audits, and also identifying really important community groups to support the initiative.
Aaron then discussed the importance of getting community feedback.
Feedback that was received from the community, which was, of course, really critical, because if you identify places to walk, it may not be, if it's not from the community or community-driven feedback, it may not be used. It may not be useful for that community. So really, in order for the community to support it and be interested and want to participate in the project, we found that getting that feedback, community-based planning was critical. And that included going to several different sites with large maps and saying, you know, where is it that you walk? What are some of the critical assets that you go to, meaning grocery stores, parks, clinics, elementary and middle schools? These were all places that were identified in the neighborhoods within the International District. So then it started being fleshed out that we wanted to connect those residents and people who come to visit in the International District to these critical assets.
I then asked, what were some of the specific tools that they used to get that community feedback?
We held several audits, walk audits, there were four, and a lot of different community members, including outside groups, participated in gathering this information. So we would know just the nature of the streetscape, how wide the sidewalks were there cracks or heavings within the sidewalks, you know, dangerous places to cross, where did people cross the streets, and were they marked, were there crosswalks for those people. And the audit supplied a lot of information as well. And finally, the major production was a large community workshop that was held in the spring of 2010 to finalize the identification of the community trail. And this was a half-day workshop that we had quite a great turnout. Our sponsor, who is the city councilor, Ray Garduno, was there, as was members of our chart, the Department of Health. There was some sponsorship by the YMCA, who's also on our chart, and many students from the elementary schools, too. So there was both the youth and adult and parent, and the residents, workers of the International District participated in the finalizing of the community trail at this planning workshop. It was a great workshop.
I then asked Aaron to expand on some of the important things that they learned while going through this process.
Great asset, as I mentioned, was that the group, who was primarily public health people, had hired a consultant, a planner, a community planner, to help them with the planning component. And I actually happen to be in kind of both fields of planning and public health. So, you know, they kind of operate a little bit differently, but now there's more crossover between those realms of land use and public health and how they are affected. Communities are affected by land use decisions.
I was curious to find out, what would they do differently if they had the opportunity to do it over again?
Things that I would change or do differently. I think from the get-go, I would probably align more or solicit more support from the city and the county planning group, because there were some things that need to be identified and spotted and known by the planning agency. So, for example, now we're going for our scoping study, which is actually being done by the county and not the city. And even, you know, work between those two entities can get sticky at times. So when we come in as, you know, public health professionals and say, we're doing a planning project, they're kind of, you know, almost quizzical, like, well, who are you and why, you know, how did you come to do this project? So from the get-go, I probably would have consulted with the planning department just to let them know that there's this project and invite them to meetings and solicit their feedback. And that could be in multiple jurisdictions.
Aaron then shared some advice for any community taking on a built environment project.
The first thing I would do is a complete assessment, be it do a really clear, you know, baseline assessment of the area, and to use both qualitative and quantitative evidence to promote the work. One thing that we're doing here in Albuquerque is a lot of the health workers are now geocoding health disparities. So we can use maps that show subpopulations and the disparities geographically that show things, anything from, you know, early mortality to asthma rates, obesity rates, and what are some other chronic disease rates, access to healthy foods, community grocery stores and such. So if that is available, or any kind of data is available into kind of geographical areas and subpopulations, because we look at everything through a health equity lens in our work. We want to make sure that places that are underserved or poorly served are, you know, represented in our work. And that's why we chose where we did to do the community trail. So that evidence is really important. And then also the qualitative evidence, going to the community and hearing their stories, and, you know, particularly maybe youth who are using the environment, places that are dangerous, looking at that, and hearing people's stories about using the streets or walking on the sidewalks, etc. That's a really great place to start to survey where you want to do either a walking trail or any kind of built environment work.
As we ended our interview, I asked Aaron to tell me any surprises that she had going through this process.
The biggest surprise is for me that sometimes when we hit barriers that have to do with getting the process going, kind of taking it to the next level. So now our next level is going to be visualizations of the trail and the scoping study, which we will use for funding mechanisms, that a lot of the cheerleaders, a lot of people have come in to say, you know, this is a great project. People I didn't realize who kind of step up to help the project get pushed along have done that. So I think that goes back to, you know, once the community is involved and there's a voice for it, and also, you know, we've done some work in soliciting and developing relationships with community leaders and political leaders, that's what's helped. And it was kind of a surprise to me to the level because, for example, we kind of had applied, we requested a scoping study, and it seemed to have gotten forgotten or lost, or I don't know what to say about that, but you know how things are in machinations and municipalities and such. And then the county came and picked it up because of one of the representatives. And it was a pleasant surprise for me that it did get picked up the way it has. And so it's something that will allow us to move forward and to apply for funding.
As we ended our interview, I asked Erin if she'd like to say any final words. And here's her insight about the people of her community and the process overall.
If it does not get done, I think a lot of the underserved neighborhoods and neighborhoods of, you know, low-income neighborhoods, see people come and go and do research, or people will start projects and they don't finish them, or they're grant-funded and something goes poof and it's gone the next day. And there's a bit of cynicism about doing projects in these areas. So I feel like, you know, the goal was not to just identify what would be great street segments. The goal was to have those street segments changed. That's the project. The identification and the process is a critical piece of it, but it's not the end piece. The end piece is to actually have the change.
I'd like to thank Erin Engelbrecht for taking the time out of her schedule to tell us the story of the Albuquerque Achieve community. If you'd like to find out more about this or any other Achieve community, you can visit them online at www.achievecommunities.org. This podcast and all the other podcasts in the series were brought to you by the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors. You can visit them online at www.chronicdisease.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Dr. Tate Martin. And until next time, let's all work together to make our communities healthier.